We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. It is Wednesday, January 25th. Nick Whalen here with Alex Barutha. Alex, we've got a fun episode coming. We're going to hit the daily news, as we always do. Maybe talk a little bit about kind of how the NBA regular season continues to feel a little bit devalued, what we could potentially do, what the NBA could potentially do to combat that. And then we are going to look back at one of our activities from the doldrums of the pandemic. Back in 2020, you did a great job going back and digging up a draft that we did. I think this was like during the intermediate period when the season was suspended and before it resumed in the bubble. We were digging deep for content at that time. We were doing some rewatches. We were kind of just trying to find ways to manufacture anything to talk about on this pod. And I believe, Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, the idea was that we were going to draft teams of players that we would want for the next 5 years. And it has not been 5 years. We'll make sure to make a note and check back in on this 2 years from now. But we're essentially at the halfway point, maybe a little bit further. So we want to go back, take a look at those teams, kind of laugh at ourselves at what we got wrong. Talk about some of the guys who, if we were to do this exercise now, would be obvious inclusions or obvious omissions.
Yeah, I was sort of accidentally reminded of this the other week, and I was like, I think we should do a review pod, because sometimes we we review these were the futures picks we liked at the beginning of the year, how could they turn out. But I don't remember last time we've reviewed sort of like a mock draft style thing we've done from like two, three, four years ago.
I don't remember, was this for fantasy or was this for real life?
This was for real life.
Okay, so we each drafted 12 players.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, we were constructing players, basically just saying these are the 12 guys I would want if I'm trying to win the title, or just put together the best super team.
Yeah, essentially, like if my team and your team had to play each other for the next 5 years, that was kind of like the thought there.
Okay, so that's a nice little teaser. We'll get to that once we hit on all the top news of the day. Looking forward to digging in on those teams. I know there was a note that we considered Andre Drummond. That's where the league was in 2020. All right, it feels like not that long ago, but. I think it's going to be really interesting to go back and kind of talk about which players have had their value, increase or fall off in a relatively short period of time. But we got some pretty positive injury news for the most part, Alex. And it starts with Anthony Davis, who is expected to be back in the lineup tonight for the LA Lakers. They're playing on the second night of a back-to-back, got just housed yet again by the Clippers last night in Staples, or the arena formerly known as Staples. 46 for LeBron. This turned into such a classic. LeBron knew they were going to lose, and he just kind of wanted to salvage what he could as far as scoring. And, he's up over 30 points per game now for the season. And yet it feels like the Lakers have, once again, kind of fallen into a rut. They'll lose three, then they'll beat a good team, and they'll lose three more. The standings in the Western Conference are so ridiculously stacked up
right now that the Lakers are in 13th and they are four games out of being in fourth place.
Yeah, the parity in the NBA is crazy. Like every night is basically, especially in the West, is like teams are competitive against each other. Like the spreads, if you look at the gambling, are pretty close all the time, obviously barring injury. But all of these teams, they just like very few of them stand out, right? Besides Memphis and Denver. So almost any other team the Lakers are playing, it's going to be, you know, they don't really have any games off, so to speak, unless they're playing the bottom four of Charlotte, Detroit, San Antonio, and Houston.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we talked about that, you know, the first month or two of the season, how it felt like pretty much every night the standings would just do a complete scramble. And we're like almost at the 50 game mark for the entire year. And that's still the case. You know, if you go a full week without like really paying attention to the NBA, all of a sudden you'll see like, what, the Sacramento Kings are in third place in the Western Conference. All of a sudden the Portland Trailblazers, who were leading the West not that long ago, are down in 12th place. They had lost 8 out of 12. I still feel like we have no real clarity in the West. And I think Denver and Memphis have been the two that at least the last month or so have been consistently in those 1 and 2 spots. And, you know, obviously a lot of respect for both of those teams, but it's like the Warriors are still in 10th. I don't view them as the 10th best team. The Clippers are in 5th. They're always going to be an incomplete grade. I mean, the Suns were out of the play-in a few days ago. Now they're up at 7. Like, the overall point is I have absolutely no idea who the elite teams are, if any, in the Western Conference. And look, I don't think the Lakers are in that category, but I do think based on how they've built this roster, which is awful, they kind of built this at the right time, because I don't think they have any chance to win the conference. But I think if LeBron and AD magically stay healthy the rest of the way and into the playoffs, like this is a team that could talk itself into at least winning a playoff series or two, just because the relative strength of the West is so down.
Right. And they could walk into a favorable matchup, right? I think this year more than ever, it's going to just be like a lot of who advances is going to be based on matchup. Yeah. You know, like we all love the Kings, but if it's Kings Lakers and everyone's healthy, you know, like
that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, are you really, the Kings will be the better team. That could be the, you know, 3-6 matchup or whatever. Are you really going to pick against LeBron and Anthony Davis?
Well, exactly. And like you look at the Kings team, it's like, if we're talking experience, these Kings guys have no experience in the playoffs. Fox doesn't have a single playoff game under his belt. Sabonis has played, I think, a few, but was not good in those. And so at some point, it's just who has the best player in the series or the best two players in the series, who has more experience. So I think it's going to be really matchup based.
Yeah. Anthony Davis aside, who was amazing before he got hurt, and you know, we'll see how long it takes him to get back to that level if he can reach it. How do you think this affects the Lakers? You know, what we just talked about with the standings being so stacked up, and the Lakers, despite being 4 games under 500 at the 50 game mark, still hanging around to a degree that they probably shouldn't. How does that affect their motivation now as the deadline approaches? Like, are you more or less likely to give up a significant piece?
I think you have to just try to maneuver. Like, I think the Rui Hachimura trade, like I am not a Hachimura guy. I'm really underwhelmed by him. I don't think he scares defenses even a little bit. But he's got good size, and he just adds, like, he's a good sized rotation player for them, which is just what they need, right? Especially if you're going to have Anthony Davis play center. So I think they should be in buyer mode, because, you know, how many times have we said this? LeBron's getting older. AD is an injury risk. Every time he gets hurt, it sort of, in theory, shortens his career a little bit. I think you just got to go for it when you have this team. And you're in a position because Westbrook's an expiring contract. Mm-hmm. So next year, you're going to have a little more financial flexibility to make something happen. I think they should just go for it and trade those picks and not worry about it.
I agree. I think your assessment that the West being as it is, I think kind of furthers LeBron's case that, hey, like we have an opportunity here that maybe we shouldn't, or that we didn't think we would have. And if we add one more guy, like there's a case to be made that we could compete with anybody in the Western Conference. Like I think that is real. The question is, who are you getting? You know, I don't think you give up those picks. Like, you know, right now they're talking about like that they'd be willing to potentially part with a lottery protected first for Bojan Bogdanovic. Like, to me, I don't know if that moves the needle. It's like, if you're getting Bogdanovic and you're getting somebody else, then sure, maybe. Or, you know, if you're getting, I'm just throwing a name out, like a Brad Beal type of player, like it's not even possible, but you know what I mean? Like, if you can get a true difference maker, then I really do think it's worth it, because the number one concern is always going to be, can Anthony Davis stay healthy? And we're never going to get an answer. It's going to be a coin flip. It literally is. Like, we have no idea if he's going to be healthy when the playoffs start, let alone can he make it through the entire playoffs. But that's what you signed up for when you acquired Anthony Davis. Like, that's just part of the deal. The other side of this is, I think LeBron is playing even better than we expected that he would. Like, nobody thought LeBron was going to completely fall off this year, but it could happen any year, and it has not happened. I mean, he's having a vintage year. He just hit 9 threes last night. Like, LeBron is ready and able to still, you know, partially carry a team to a title. So I think if you put the right pieces around him, you could talk yourself into that argument. I think the problem is there's not an obvious target for them who really, really makes a difference. I think we're looking at a lot of like higher to mid-level role players who are available at the deadline, but I don't think, you know, bringing in like John Collins puts the Lakers over the top.
Oh no. And then they become a little forward heavy. It's the same with Bojan. Right. It's like, well, if you're going to play Anthony Davis at center and LeBron at the 4/3, it's like, you can only have so many guys that also play that position. It's like, okay, now we have Hachimura and John Collins. It's like, how many forwards can we
actually? Toscano Anderson and Wenyen Gabriel. Right.
So, I mean, I think more than anything, they just need a sort of reliable two-way guard. And there's just not a lot of options out there. But, you know, Terry Rozier comes to mind as somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if the Hornets, I don't know what the Hornets' plans are, but I don't think they would like mind taking on Westbrook for a year with a sweetener to dump Terry Rozier to the Lakers. Like, that's the kind of guy I think you have to be chasing.
Jordan Brand athlete, Russell Westbrook. You have to keep that in mind.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Rozier's probably on the higher end. You know, it's like, I'd take him over Bogdanovic, but I still think he is a level below somebody who makes a true difference. You could say the same thing about like Mike Conley. His name has been batted around. I think that makes a lot of sense. But again, this Lakers team is not a Mike Conley away from winning the title. It's like that needs to be one of your supplementary additions. It can't be the primary piece, can't be Mike Conley. So yeah, we'll see. I don't know how they handle it. I mean, this whole thing is so bizarre, because since when have the Lakers ever cared about the future? Like, why now of all times, when you're more pot committed to this team than you've ever been in franchise history, why is now the time that you choose to start protecting your future assets?
It's weird, right? Because they're just a team that historically, it's like, well, we're LA, we'll just sign people. Like, we'll just sign good players and make a good team.
Right.
You know, like, the thing is, when they were bad, they drafted relatively well, right? Like, they actually used, Randall, Ingram, Lonzo, Kuzma.
Like, Josh, I mean, Larry Nance. Like, think if you just put like two of those guys back on this team, how much better you'd feel about it. Like, even if Josh Hart himself was just on this roster.
So maybe they're sort of like obsessed with that idea of like, well, if this blows up and we got our picks, we can fire it back up, because clearly we know what we're doing. But I think you just gotta, like you said, commit to this team and realize that we're the Lakers. If we want to build a competitive team just through free agency in the next however many years, we'll just clear our cap space and just gun for like two major free agents at some point in the future.
Right. And at that point, you're assuming that LeBron is probably out of the league if we're talking 2029, although I don't know if you would wager on that, but he's probably gone. It's not like you're worried about having, you know, these salaries on the books for your current team. It doesn't add up. I don't know. The whole thing is just strange. It almost feels like they built a bad roster intentionally. I just don't know how you could possibly have Anthony Davis and have LeBron on the roster, and this is the team that you put around them. I don't know, complete incompetency. But anyway, the point is, Anthony Davis is coming back tonight. That's where this discussion started, but completely off the rails. Other injury news, Chris Middleton back in action, came back, I think it was Monday night. Bucks blew out the Detroit Pistons. That was one of my best bets that night, Alex, was that game would go under. I think the total was like 230, and it went over by 50 points, one of my worst bets of all time. But the Bucks look great on offense. The Pistons just play no defense whatsoever. I thought Middleton would be a little rusty. You know, Giannis was coming back off of a multi-game absence as well. Both of those guys look fine. But now Milwaukee loses Bobby Portis for at least a couple weeks.
That's pretty big. He's a sixth man of the year candidate, more like a dark horse, but he's just been so reliable for Milwaukee over the years. Great energy guy for the Bucks. Obviously can space out, grab some rebounds. And it's like, you just have to think about, who are we replacing him with? And there's no like one for one replacing Bobby Portis on this roster. I assume it'll just be a little bit more like, maybe they'll just consistently give Joe Ingles, you know, like 26, 27 minutes a game. You try a little Beauchamp a little bit more. You know, I'm still just not really a Nwora guy.
No.
You know, maybe they try a little Wes Matthews, but I think you can run small. You know, ironically, they already agreed to just give Serge Ibaka away, so he's not going to come back and play for the Bucks and sort of fill that role. But I think it's a big absence for them for 2 weeks, but hopefully Middleton can come in and start shooting better, because he just did not look comfortable out there when he was healthy.
No, he didn't. And, you know, I thought, again, he looked okay on Monday, you know, hit a couple like pull-up threes, pull-up jumpers that look, you know, vintage Middleton, but we need to see it for multiple weeks at a time. You're right on Portis. This is where Serge Ibaka basically quitting the team is really hurting Milwaukee. Like, they have no center depth right now. Like, I, you know, one of my bets for today that I put out on DraftKings was Brook Lopez over 13 and a half points, because I think no matter how you think this game goes against Denver, he's going to have to play a bunch of minutes. Like, unless he's in foul trouble, like, who else is playing? Like, do they have to dip down into Mamu Kavishvili? Like, he's the only other, like, you know, true quote unquote center on the roster other than Giannis. So that they're in a bad spot now. And, you know, as long as this injury is nothing super long-term with Portis, I think they'll be fine. Like, if he can come back after the All-Star break and stay healthy, they'll be okay. But I do think this maybe, you know, gives them a little more motivation to potentially add somebody to that front court. It doesn't have to be anybody major, but just some sort of depth at the deadline.
Yeah. I mean, if you know, they haven't played that well this year, but I think they probably assume they can make a push if they grab someone at the deadline. And Joe Ingles already was supposed to be that guy, and I actually think he's played really well for Milwaukee. He gives them some extra playmaking that they didn't necessarily have off the bench with, like, you know, Connaughton doesn't play make, George Hill basically out of the rotation. Javon Carter's not a great playmaker. So I wouldn't be surprised if they made a little push at the deadline.
Ingles has looked really good. I was skeptical. Yeah. I didn't love using the full mid-level on him. I thought that could have been better spent elsewhere. I thought maybe they could have gotten him on kind of the, you know, end of career veteran chasing a title deal, especially coming off a torn ACL. But yeah, he's been fantastic. He's been a really good fit. I think that's looking like a hit for Milwaukee. Big news out of New Orleans. Finally, Alex, Brandon Ingram, after what felt like being day-to-day for like 30 straight games, he's expected to be back tonight. Missed 29 games with, as far as we're aware, just a bruised toe, right?
That's all they've said.
Yeah. I don't know if he just stubbed it or what.
Yeah. I mean, the New Orleans Pelicans definitely, they have a little bit of a reputation for being not especially forthcoming with their injury news. You know, Zion Williamson last year, for example. But this is big for them, right? Because the Pelicans, like, they had been surviving without Zion and Ingram for a while, but they just recently started sliding pretty badly. They've lost five straight. And so I think those guys who have been filling in, I think, are just gassed. You know, you get a little jolt of energy when you're filling in for those stars sometimes, and the team sort of rallies, but at some point it starts to drag. So I think the Ingram coming back, I assume he'll be, you know, ramped up, the whole thing. But this is huge for them. But unfortunately, Zion is now out for, what, another 2 weeks, they said, at least.
Yeah, well, you mentioned last year the Pels not being overly forthcoming with Zion. The initial three-week timetable back at the beginning of January, 3 weeks have passed. And then the update, as you alluded to yesterday, was he's out at least 2 more weeks. And that's when he's going to be reevaluated. So at this point, it's looking extremely likely that he won't play before the All-Star break, at least in my mind. You know, I guess he could be reevaluated, and he would have like 1 or 2 games to potentially play before the break. To me, that just depends on like how badly does he want to play in the All-Star game, because there's not a ton of precedent for guys like missing, you know, 6 straight weeks and then just coming back and playing in the All-Star game. I feel like Zach LaVine did something like that last year, the year before, didn't go over super well. So maybe there's some motivation there if you're Zion. Might end up starting the All-Star game, depending on how the voting breaks down. But either way, I would say pretty good chance we don't see him until late February, which is okay. You know, like you mentioned, the Pelicans are treading water. They're fourth in the Western Conference. But, you know, if Ingram is rusty at all, like they are liable. Like you're 1 bad week away from falling from 4th to 11th pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I mean, I believe in them long term. Like for the rest, I believe in them as a team that can make the Western Conference Finals. But at some point, like you just, these guys got to stay healthy, and I just, you know, like, it's hard to judge this team without both of Zion and Ingram. So I'm excited to see when they finally both eventually get back on the court, even though that's probably gonna be post All-Star break.
We got the classic update, non-update on Kevin Durant yesterday as well. He's on track in his recovery plan and yet will not be reevaluated for another 2 weeks. So he is essentially on the exact same timeline as Zion and faces a lot of the same questions. You know, does he care about playing in the All-Star game? I don't know. You would think maybe. You know, the Nets have a very similar schedule, of course. I mean, if we're looking at 2 weeks from now, that would be February 8th. And Durant at that point, you know, if he's cleared, would have four potential games to play before the break. So it's possible. I would say probably not likely if you're the Nets and you're thinking long term. But, you know, overall, it looks like this will probably be closer to what, a 6 or 7 week injury for Durant.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. And if you're the Nets, it's all just about keeping Durant healthy because you stand no chance in the playoffs without Durant, none whatsoever. So anything you can do to keep him healthy, as long as you need to keep him out, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of been a disaster since he went out, as you'd expect. You know, basically, if Kyrie's not giving them like 35 to 40, they have very little chance to beat any team right now, even the bottom feeders. But, you know, that's kind of what you'd expect with a guy like KD going out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, real quickly, I want to talk about the kind of brooding narrative that's been there for a while on the NBA, you know, regular season being devalued. If you're watching SportsCenter, you're watching NBA TV last night, or even if you're on Twitter, you know, you saw like the kid who flew from Argentina to watch Jimmy Butler, and he ends up sitting out, and you know, the team made it up to him, whatever. It's all good, but I feel like these situations are becoming more and more common. And this is not a new narrative by any means. This has been something that's around for a while, but I thought it was interesting on the Bill Simmons pod today. I was listening and they were talking about this, and you know, he mentioned the possibility of tethering like All-Star eligibility, All-NBA eligibility, MVP award eligibility to a baseline number of games played. Do you think that would incentivize players to play more? Because I think it would.
It could, but to some extent, it's just up to the voters, right? Like we can, like if we all sort of decide, not collectively, but I think there's just a point where, I don't know, like how many people are going to vote LeBron to the All-NBA team if he only plays 45 games or something like that?
Yeah.
Part of me thinks it's baked in with the voters already, but it is, I think, it's more important than it used to be because so many of these players like max contracts or super max contracts are baked into these awards. And so that's where it becomes an issue. You know, so I don't know, that could end up being like a collective bargaining issue, but
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too, is do you tie this into contracts? And I think that's really where you would start to see, I think some change in motivation on the player side is like, hey, you're not eligible for a supermax unless you've averaged X number of games across the last few years. And like you said, I mean, that would be a complete nightmare from a Players Association perspective. There would be monster pushback because, look, it's not like players are only missing games because they're sitting out the second half of a back-to-back, or, you know, their ankle hurts a little bit and they probably could play. Like, there are a million reasons why guys are missing games. And as we've seen over and over and over, even some of the most injury-prone players in the league, whether it be Kawhi, Durant, Zion, like, these guys are still getting max contracts. Like, it's still worth it for the team to pay them. So tying it into contracts, I think that the idea of it is interesting. I just don't think it would ever be feasible or ever be ratified by the Players Association. So I think you could throw that out. But, you know, putting a firm games played eligibility on something like the All-Star game or All-NBA, I think that would at least curb some of the unprovoked missed games, you know, essentially just the rest games. Ideally, you would just trim down the season a little bit, or, you know, make the schedule a little more segmented, even if that means extending it out a little bit, like get rid of back-to-backs altogether, never play five games in 7 nights, things like that. That's probably a little bit more feasible to me.
I think so. I mean, I've always been in favor of a shorter schedule. If you know, I even think, like, you just play each team twice during the regular season and that's that, or just once, excuse me. You play them once at home and once on the road and that's it. I think that would be a good amount to where the games feel like they have meaning. You would play zero back-to-backs whatsoever. You could always start the season a little bit later or extend it out, you know, because most casual fans are not what they don't really pay attention or dive into the NBA until after the Super Bowl anyway.
Right. But
yeah, I think that would help as well. And, you know, I know they just want the TV money, and if anything, it sounds like they're going to just add more games with the play-in tournament. But yeah, I think the only issue I see, like, I think it's a good idea maybe to have minimums in theory. My only issue is if, like, let's say that we make the minimum 60 and some guy plays like 59. It's like, we're going to LeBron James or Kevin Durant or Giannis played 59 games instead of 60. So we just can't put them in there. And we have to put like Markkanen in instead. So I think that's where a sort of I don't know if slippery slope is the right term, but that just makes it tough.
No, slippery slope, I think, is the perfect term. And I think, yeah, if you're right on the borderline, do you check into a game for 5 seconds and
exactly.
You know, get a rebound and then check out? I don't know. You're right. It's not a perfect system. If there was a perfect solution, then the NBA probably would have done it by now. But I mean, am I exaggerating this? Like, does it not feel to you that this is becoming like an increasing crisis, at least among big time NBA fans? Like, I don't think the casual sports fan really cares about this all that much. But to me, like, the biggest marker is, like, 5 years ago, all everybody was talking about was how much momentum the league had. And, you know, basketball is going to overtake football as the biggest sport in America. Like, it just feels like all that is gone. And I think the pandemic is a part of it, but all of that positivity has now been replaced by a lot of negativity from the people who care most about watching the league.
Yeah. I don't think casual fans mind that much, because I think the casual fan just like flips on the ESPN or the TNT game. And then they're like, oh, Giannis is out. I'm going to watch, Bones now or whatever. Like, they just they just change the channel. They don't even think twice about it.
That's Bones the show, not Bones Highland, right?
Yes, exactly. Although if Jamal Murray's out, they should be watching Bones. I've thought about this myself, because I went to a game earlier in the season with my dad. We went and saw the Bucks game in Milwaukee against the Mavericks, and I realized after I bought the tickets, I'm like, this is a second half of the back-to-back for the Mavericks. And Doncic was already rested on the second half of a back-to-back before. And now I'm like sweating it a little bit, but, I just bit the bullet. I was like, well, I figure, you know, he'll probably just rest against like the bad teams. He'll play against Milwaukee, but you legitimately have to think about that when you buy NBA tickets now. Like, if you're a fan who just wants to go see a game, you have to think, like, is this the second night of a back-to-back? Is this 3 games in 5 nights? Is this,
right.
You know, did this guy play 40 minutes in back-to-back games? How old is he? It's like, you really don't even want to buy these tickets until like the 4:30 injury report comes out.
Right.
Cause then, you know, probably these guys are going to play.
Right. And we do this for a living. And like, for us, it's hard to figure out, you know, it's like, I think the issue that a lot of people bring up is like, you know, the 12-year-old kid who goes to one game a year and his mom got him the tickets for Christmas. It's like, Mom, how did you not know Jamal Murray would be sitting out tonight? Like, you know, he doesn't play back-to-backs.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
You're asking people to do something that's just not feasible for the average fan.
No, it's really not. Yeah, you and I think, and people who play fantasy sort of take this stuff for granted because we're primed to think about this stuff all the time. DFS, gambling, fantasy, we're like, oh, you know, back to backs and guys who had knee soreness and stuff like that. But yeah, the average person is not thinking about stuff like that at all. They're just like, I want to do something nice for my kids. Or, hey, it's been a while since I saw a Bulls game. Like, hey, let's go to a Bulls game. We're going to buy tickets for a next month's game. Because people have busy lives too, right? Like, people can't always just be like, oh, I'm bored. I'm going to go to the Bulls game tonight. That's like not how people operate. They're like, no. I'm going to get my buddies together and we're going to pick a game a month from now when we're all free and we're going to go. And then all of a sudden, you just don't know. And then you feel like you got screwed out of however much money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I to put a bow on that point, I don't think the solution is like educate fans on when they should know players are resting.
Right.
That is not the solution at all.
No, it's not.
And I think that's kind of like some of the messaging that's been out there of like, all right, well, hey, you got to look back to back, you know, long road trip. Like, again, the average fan is not thinking about that. When when you're buying tickets months in advance, you just can't know. You have no idea what the context is going to be. Like, you're not looking at the rotation and saying like, well, you know, he might be overworked here. That's their fourth game in 8 nights. Like, no, it's just not how it works. So I don't know. I wish I could offer a better solution. I mean, I will say that the number one thing that seems like the wrong move right now would be to insert a midseason tournament.
Yeah. Unless you are drastically scaling back the amount of normal regular season games. Like if you want to pull back to 52 or 56 or however many regular season games and then do your midseason tournament, and then along with the play-in tournament, we get to somewhere like 72 total at most, because some teams are going to get eliminated really early from the midseason, and some teams are going to get eliminated or just not play in the play-in tournament. Those teams might play 64 games. And if you happen to go all the way in the midseason, but somehow still need to go through the play-in, you might play 72 or whatever. That would be okay. But no, I don't think they should just straight up add more games, which is what that's sort of the implication, because we keep hearing about the play-in tournament, but never attached to that is, oh yes, we're also reducing the regular season by 15 games.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we'll table that for now. Well, I'm sure we'll revisit it at some point, maybe over the All-Star break, but let's go back to the 2020 draft. And I'm looking forward to this. I'm also not looking forward to explaining some of my picks, but I'll kind of turn this over to you. You can offer a little bit more context as far as what we were doing at the time, what the goal of the exercise was, and then we'll kind of guide our way through reviewing that draft.
Yeah, so this was April of 2020 for context. So this was before the bubble started back up, or before the bubble occurred, which I think was in August?
That was July or August, yeah.
Of 2020. And so, like you mentioned before, we were scrambling for content, so I don't know who thought of the idea, but like, hey, let's just draft a team for the next 5 years. Not fantasy, real life. So if you were just real life drafting a team, what would you do? And so this isn't fantasy. So a lot, I think I thought about this a lot. And I think based on your team build, you were doing it as well. I was trying to build a team that made sense, especially the starting five. Like, I wasn't going to draft a ton of guys. Like, I wasn't going to draft five guards. I wasn't going to draft three centers right off the bat. So I tried to construct a team that at least theoretically made sense for my starters. And then of course you just have to weigh trying to win now versus trying to win in that fourth or fifth year. And so, yeah, we drafted a starting five, and I think we drafted, what is this? Seven bench spots.
Yep.
You conceded the number one pick to me, and then we forgot to go in snake draft. So we just alternated, but then I gave you the first pick of the reserves.
Okay, that's fair.
That's exactly what you said at the time. So I went back and I listened to this podcast, and I also pulled a few interesting quotes that we said from it, stuff that's funny in hindsight. It also puts the league in context, because the league right now, I mean, 3 years ago, the way the NBA is sort of accelerating in terms of offense, in terms of play styles, it feels like a completely different era. 3 years ago. I mean, this was Ja Morant's rookie season, Zion's rookie season, stuff like that. So we can jump right into it. I got the number one pick and I chose Giannis. to me, I think my logic was I just wanted, it was between Giannis and Doncic for me. Mm-hmm. And I basically conceded that at that point, I already thought this is Doncic's second year in the league, I believe, right?
Yes. Yeah,
this is Doncic's second year in the league. And I already acknowledged that he was a better offensive player than Giannis. I'm like, he's just better on offense than Giannis will ever be. But I wanted a two-way player. And at that point, Giannis is like, you know, riding high, obviously. So I went there. And then you followed up with Doncic.
Yeah, let's just give, you know, kind of our first like five picks and we'll go from there. So sure. we just went every other. So you started with Giannis, I went Doncic, and then who were your next four?
My next four were Jokic, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron / Bronny James. That was negotiated. Yep. That I also
got the Bronny, right, Bronny.
If LeBron retired. And then James Harden rounded out my five. So Giannis, Jokic, Kawhi, LeBron, Harden. What was yours?
Not a lot of misses there. Obviously, you know, I think Kawhi in hindsight, that was kind of just the start of the knee issues, right? Because Toronto had won the title in 2019. And so we knew that the knee and the thigh or whatever, the quad, we knew about it, but I don't think this was kind of before like everything started up of him just like missing every other game for the Clippers. So at the time that made a lot more sense, still does. But you know, I think now we'd be a little more cautious with Kawhi.
Yes, this was for context. This was Kawhi's first year in LA. And I'm quoted in the podcast saying that I'm, quote, a little concerned about Kawhi's knee. And I also said that, and I also said, quote, Kawhi is better than Jokic, but I wanted a floor spacing center, which is why I took Jokic number two in my draft over Kawhi. But at that time, again, you have to put this floor in spacer context. Kawhi is coming off the, I wanted a floor spacing center next to Giannis. That was my argument. I was like, I said, I don't want to like scramble later and try to get Miles Turner. But at this time, again, Kawhi's coming off the finals, and Jokic, this is his second all-star season, and he averaged 20-10-7. So he was not a 25-point-per-game scorer. Right. He was only shooting 52% from the field, 31% from three. Obviously, we all knew he was great, but it wasn't the next year's when he exploded and started averaging 26-11-8 on crazy efficient shooting.
Yeah, so I think your starting five makes sense. And with Harden, you know, I mean, this was his last year in Houston, I believe. Yep. I think that was the year that him and Westbrook were together in Houston and ended up losing to the Lakers in the bubble. But he had averaged 34 that year. He had averaged 36 the year before and I believe won MVP. So, yeah, I mean, if anything, getting Harden with the ninth overall pick, I think is a pretty good value there. Is it implied then that these five were our starters?
Yes.
Okay, so you're starting Giannis, Jokic, Kawhi, LeBron, Harden. Not bad. My five were Doncic, Anthony Davis, Karl-Anthony Towns, Jason Tatum, Damian Lillard. So I like my team, but I think you have the stronger starting five by a pretty good margin in retrospect.
Yeah, this is sort of what we talked about at the end of the podcast, where it was like my team at this time would have had like a way stronger chance of winning the first 2 years if our teams played like seven game series in the first 2 years, but then years three through five is where it starts to probably lean more towards your team. I drafted a little bit more for the moment. Didn't think as far into that final 5 years.
Right. And yeah, we should note that, you know, I guess we did note it, but you know, we're thinking 5 years from now. So obviously like nobody that we've named has really fallen off. It's like, I guess of these guys, like Kat is probably the guy whose stock has fallen the most in this span, ironically, right. And he's like one of the youngest guys on the list. But you know, I think at the time we probably expected that LeBron would take a bigger step back by now. You know, and I don't even think we expected that Jokic would be at the point that he is right now either. So that pick looks really good in retrospect. You know, I think the two big guys who stand out that we haven't named are Curry and Joel Embiid.
Yeah, Embiid. I grabbed Embiid later. I grabbed Embiid with my first bench spot and you know, 2019-20, we were still pretty concerned about his injuries. He played 30 minutes a game that season. I was like, my logic was, hey, I can have him be Jokic's backup and play him 23 minutes a game and it'll be fine. He won't, you know, we mitigate the injury risk, but you know, he averaged 23, 12, and 1.3 blocks that year. He's good, but it's not like he is now. And then Curry went way too late in this draft. You got Curry with your third bench spot. So we both continued to pass on Curry, but he had played five games that year, right? So
yes, that was the broken hand year. And he was also bad in those games. Like it was very small sample, but the shooting was terrible. The Warriors were a complete joke. They didn't even make, I don't even think they played in the bubble, right? Cause they didn't make it. So yeah, his stock was way down. They had just lost in the finals the year before. I think it was somewhat fair to question if he was going to take a step back, but even without having the context of you know, what we said on the pod, like this seems way too late. I mean, he went with what, the 15th pick? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's weird because I agree. He went way too late, and I don't really think we can be forgiven for that. Like, we didn't even acknowledge it on the pod. Like, I don't think either of us said, like, oh, wow, like, neither of us took Curry. Like, this feels a little late, doesn't it? No, it just felt like really normal, which kind of tells you how violently some of these guys, the narrative around them fluctuates, and the perception of them and what their future holds and all that stuff. So that was surprising.
Yeah, I think the other one too is KD, and you took him with your second reserve pick, so he would have been the like 14th pick overall. But this was after he torn his Achilles in the Toronto Finals. He didn't play at all in 1920. I believe he was technically on the Nets at that point. Completely different context. We didn't really know what the future held. I think it was at that time, I remember thinking like, man, KD, he really gave it his all to, you know, for that final game with the Warriors, but he may never be the same. Like, right. I think where KD is now versus where we thought he would be, this has been basically the best case scenario.
It is, although he continues to get hurt after this Achilles thing. But yeah, I mean, my logic in there was, yeah, I'll miss him. Like, I'm worried about the Achilles, but I said, even if Durant's 85% of his former self, he's still going to be like one of the greatest shooters in the NBA. Like I just wasn't, I was like, that's still going to be an amazing player if he's 80% of who he used to be. I wasn't so concerned, especially cause I got him so late. And then you took Curry after him, and I second the pod that I was going to take Curry, but, you took him. So I took Paul George after you took Curry.
Well, do you want to just run through the reserve rosters for context?
Yeah, I do want to say first, you mentioned you took Kat in your starting lineup. I said at one point after you took Kat that I said, quote, part of me thinks Kat's natural position is four. I thought he's a power. I think he's a power forward. And then lo and behold, 3 years later, he's playing power forward, which I don't think anybody really expected. It was just a weird.
Did you speak the Rudy Gobert trade into existence?
I may have. Yeah, it was a little bit of a premonition there. So our benches, my bench goes Embiid. This is an order. Embiid, KD, Paul George, Trae Young, Ben Simmons, Devin Booker, Kristaps Porzingis. Can't really explain that one, to be honest with you. And then what's your bench?
My bench was Zion, Bam Adebayo, Curry, Siakam, Kyrie, Brandon Ingram, Brad Beal.
Yeah, so, I mean, I did call Ben Simmons underrated the podcast at one point.
Sure.
Although, and I also did put Embiid and Ben Simmons on the same team again, ironically. But you have to remember in 2019-20 was Ben Simmons' peak as a player.
Yeah.
He was averaging 16-8-8, led the league with 2.1 steals. He was a two-time All-Star at that point, made the All-NBA team, and made the All-Defensive team. So I was like, well, what's the worst case scenario for this guy? Like, he's just a perennial All-Defensive player, one of the best passers, one of the best transition players in the NBA. Obviously, just like impossible to predict what happened. And you mentioned too, you were like, well, I'm just concerned he has no skill development. And then I said, like, what's he gonna get worse?
Yeah. What a laughable thought. That could never happen.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. You know, at the time, for sure. I mean, you don't even have to defend that. Like, Ben Simmons was a big time commodity in 2020. Like, no doubt about it. It totally justifiable. I'm sure I would have taken him if you didn't. Porzingis, that one is questionable. I think that's probably the only real one that, looking back, doesn't make that much sense, because he did miss all of the 18-19 season with the ACL, came back in 1920 and actually looked okay. I mean, he averaged like 20-9 with two blocks, but was still in and out of the lineup, only played 57 games. Field goal percentage was way down. 3-point shooting was way down. But I don't know. Do you remember like what your rationale was? Were you were just a big Porzingis guy at the time?
I liked Porzingis. I mean, he was 24 years old that year at the time. So like, you're still thinking like this guy has room to grow.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah. The ACL injury, but you know, like you mentioned, he comes out that next year, his first year with Dallas, averages 20-10 with two blocks on relatively efficient shooting. And I figured he'd keep developing and, you know, like, it just didn't seem like I wasn't that worried about the injury issues continuing. But neither of us, I think the biggest sort of snub here is that basically I took Porzingis and you took Beal over Ja Morant.
Yeah, that was that was a big miss. And, you know, this was Ja's rookie year. Yeah. And so basically he played like half a season and then the shutdown happened. And I mean, he was good during that half season. I also think he has ascended to a completely different level now versus where I thought he would be. So at the time that we did this pod, Ja had played 59 career games. He averaged 17.6 points, 7 assists, 3.5 rebounds, 50% from the field, 36% from three on just over 2 attempts per game, 77% at the line. So pretty good. I can't really explain why we would have left him off other than I mean, like Brad Beal's stock, like Brad Beal's averaging 30 a game at this point. So like, you know, that was justifiable. You know, Brandon Ingram had kind of started to ascend for New Orleans. Obviously Kyrie, this was well before, you know, some of the more concerning personal matters that had started to crop up with him. So yeah, I mean, I think it just was one of those things where we probably hadn't seen quite enough of Morant. And if we had done this even 6 months later, we would have included him.
Yeah, it's hard to put his sort of rookie year in context because that year feels so jumbled for obvious reasons. And he won rookie of the year, but it didn't really feel like I was watching a future Hall of Famer, if that makes sense. Like, And there were still holes in his game, and those holes to an extent still exist. You know, I was like, well, he doesn't really shoot threes that well. Like, yeah, he's a great passer, and you know, he's obviously an amazing acrobatic finisher and gets in the lane, everything, but not a good free throw shooter, not a good 3-point shooter. And he doesn't play defense. I was like, you know, if I just have to, if I'm trying to feel confident and win over the next 5 years, it felt safer to take Ben Simmons. It felt safer to take Devin Booker, and to an extent, it felt safer to take Kristaps Porzingis.
No, for sure. For sure. I mean, he's had a monster ascent. No question about that. I like I said, I think if we did it a year later, we would have felt differently. But, you know, we were also looking at him from a fantasy perspective. And he was one of those guys who was a better real life player than a fantasy player. We were questioning, like, his second season, he shot 30% from three. He's only at 32% this year, by the way. But he didn't really ascend to like, whoa, this guy is going to be, you know, one of the household names until his third year. So at the time, justifiable. I think he probably would have been, you know, one of our next two or three guys out. We have a long list of potential players that we included. I'll try to run through this list as quickly as I can. Jimmy Butler, Russell Westbrook, Oladipo, Morant, Sabonis, Gobert, John Collins. Wow. Mitchell Robinson, Andre Drummond, Chris Middleton, Clint Capella, Zach LaVine, Jaren Jackson, Klay Thompson, D'Angelo Russell, Lonzo, Jaylen Brown, SGA, Donovan Mitchell, Jamal Murray, De'Aaron Fox.
So I have a couple quotes about these guys that I grabbed from myself. On the Morant front, I said, quote, Fox and Morant are comparable as players, but Fox's defensive upside is higher. I actually think that puts decent context into what we sort of thought of Morant. It's like, hey, both of these guys are very quick, very athletic. They're good passers. They don't shoot very well, but we know Fox can play defense. And then I also said, quote, Oladipo would be a sneaky pick in this draft. Maybe a little too sneaky.
He definitely would have been sneaky.
And then on the Collins front, I mean, this is Collins' best year. This is when Collins looked like, I think he ranked 7th in 9 cap per game value this year. Was averaging 22-10 with a 1.6 blocks. And shot 58, 40, 80, and was playing a lot of center for them. This is before they got Capella. So that sort of explains that. And then the Drummond thing, So Drummond was 2019-20. This is the year he was shipped off from Detroit to Cleveland.
Yep.
But he was still averaging. He was averaging 18 and 15 with 3 assists, 1.9 steals, and 1.6 blocks. And you have to remember, he was 26 years old. Like, it did not feel like his career was over.
No, not at all. That one is, that's the name that sticks out as kind of laughable. But I mean, the counting stats were ridiculous. Like, he had led the league in rebounding for the last 5 years. He was having another monster year in Detroit. It did feel like this was finally the year, though, that we collectively decided, like, wait a second, he might not actually be contributing to winning. So right. The fact that we still brought him up is interesting. But yeah, it's the size. It's the, you know, his passing had kind of materialized a little bit. He was averaging 3 assists a game. And he's one of those guys too, who is a much bigger deal in fantasy, depending on what format you're playing. Yes. So, you know, maybe we had him more top of mind than non-fantasy people would have. But yeah, he's probably the one that sticks out the most. I mean like Lonzo Ball obviously wouldn't be on that list now, but, you know, really, really good player when healthy. Does feel like that's going to just go down as kind of one of those what if situations. I think SGA would obviously be in the mix if we did this today. Donovan Mitchell has taken a big step forward. He's another guy that I'm surprised we didn't give more serious consideration to, because I look back and I was thinking, like, oh, is he only in the league like 1 year at this time? Like, this was his third season. I mean, he's what, 22 years old, putting up 25 a game. So yeah, I'm surprised that I went with Brandon Ingram, especially over Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah. So the SGA, that was his first year in OKC. And so it was good, but nobody was like really thinking much about it.
Yeah.
Ingram at the time, you know, 2019-20, this was his first year on the Pelicans and he made his first All-Star game. Just looked like he'd made a huge leap shooting wise, right? You're projecting this guy out. He's 22 years old, averaging 24-6-4. And now he's shooting 39% from three. You're like, oh, okay, this is serious. And so I think Donovan Mitchell's numbers just looked a little pedestrian. And he did. Mm-hmm. He basically made no improvement from his second to his third year. And so I think probably soured us a little bit, because he came out so strong as a rookie. And then the improvements over the next 2 years were like solid, but just not really much. And so I think we were probably thinking, is this guy just kind of who he is? And to an extent, like, yes, but he's just gotten way more efficient over the years. But yeah, it would have obviously been better to have him on. And, you know, you think about Jaylen Brown as well.
Yep.
You know, Jaylen Brown, this was his fourth year in the NBA. First year, he averaged 20 points. But, you know, he still had a negative assist to turnover ratio. The free throw shooting was still kind of poor. It didn't feel as clear. And then, you know, one of the hot names right now, Jaren Jackson, this was the second year in the NBA and he showed some flashes, but the injuries, were an issue too. And I think we were concerned about the rebounding and stuff like that, but he's blown up as well.
I'm looking at guys who made all NBA teams since we did this. Chris Paul was not really brought up at all. I think, you know, at the time, I think that's when he would have, what, just arrived in Phoenix? Or maybe he was still with OKC. I think he had just got to Phoenix.
OKC.
He was. So that was his final OKC year. Yeah, we were just really concerned about him staying healthy. I think that was the first year that he went to, like, the plant-based diet. And, you know, it turned out that did wonders for him for the next couple of years. DeMar DeRozan, we did not mention at all. Julius Randle, who ended up making second-team All-NBA the following season, didn't mention him. Other than that, though, I think we pretty much covered all of our bases. And to be honest, I don't really feel bad about not including Chris Paul and DeMar DeRozan. We could not have seen that coming.
No. And I think DeRozan was, this was his second year in San Antonio. And like, he was playing really well for people who are paying attention, you know, 22 mm-hmm. points a game on 53%, great assist to turnover ratio, but it just felt so lukewarm. And we figured, well, this is a 5-year draft. He's already 30 years old. Like, why would we? There's just so many other guys that are more exciting that you would just rather have. But yeah, I don't feel too bad about those omissions compared to some other guys like Morant. And I'm a huge SGA guy, but I don't think I was at that point. I think to me, it took like his third year for me to be like, oh, okay, I think this guy might be a potential star.
100%. So looking at your roster now, it's like, I think you probably keep 80% of it, but you probably drop what, Ben Simmons and Porzingis? I mean, do you drop Trae Young? Do you have to? It's like, does he kind of still stay on as your final spot?
I think Trae Young is still, I think he's still good enough to have on. I mean, I'm not convinced he's an all-star this year, but he's just so gifted as a passer, and he's basically 30-10. It's hard for me to completely give up on him yet, especially in this context where it's like, I have this guy coming off my bench in theory. But yeah, I mean, if we had to basically, you know, if we redid this every year where we were forced to drop one player and then we would add, or forced to drop three players and add, or however. Yeah, I mean, Simmons, Booker, and Porzingis would be my drops. Like, I think I would drop Ben Simmons for sure. That would be the guy I'd be off this team. And then I would obviously try to grab. You know what? Would you take Morant or SGA?
If we're talking, are we saying for the, like, continuing for the next 2 years, or you get him for the next 5 years? Not that it really matters, I guess, because they're similar in age.
Let's say for the next 5 years.
SGA.
Yeah. I think I'm leaning there too because of the defense. Like,
size, lack of recklessness. You know, I mean, it's like I think we think of Ja being a better shooter. That's not really the case. I mean, I don't know. The thing with Morant is, like, obviously the points and the assists are there. And you can say the same thing about SGA. A lot of what makes Morant so awesome is almost, like, unquantifiable. Like, he's just like a cool guy. And I don't know, man. Like, I feel like SGA is the guy who could get markedly even better over the next 5 years. Whereas I don't know about Morant. Like, I guess the shooting could improve, but short of that, I think he kind of is what he is. And that's a really, really fun player. But ultimately, you know, I think you have to have a really good team around him, which they do already. And that's great. But, like, would Ja Morant be able to lead this Thunder team to essentially a 500 record? I don't know.
That's hard to say. I honestly just think it comes down to how much you value defense, you know?
Yeah.
But SGA's size, his defense, he's just, he never looks rushed out there. He's just so calm and collected. The variety of ways in which he can score are so diverse, and I think it'll really help in a playoff series. But, you know, and to some extent, it's like Trae Young too. It's like, if I'm trying to win a playoff series, I'm taking Jrue Holiday over Trae Young.
Yeah.
Like, Trae Young puts up absurd offensive numbers. He's a better offensive player than Holiday. But at some point, it's like, we can't just build an offense. We just can't build a purely offensive basketball team.
I really think SGA versus Morant, who would you rather have, is, like, one of the closest debates you could possibly have. I don't feel that strongly about it. I think if you put that out there on Twitter, it could come back exactly 50-50.
It really could. I mean, I think that debate could get a little heated. Because it is, you know, it's people who, like we mentioned, they value defense, or they value, you know, maybe they really think, like, Morant, the sort of energy he brings is unquantifiable, like you mentioned. Right. The athleticism for the explosive plays and what he's going to be able to do because of his athleticism is just going to be better. And that's a tough debate. It's insane that we are having this debate. Like, if we were said 2 years ago that we were having this debate, or last year, we'd be like, what happened? You know, and SGA is now putting up, like, MVP caliber numbers.
Well, if nothing else, I think this has given us motivation to do this again at some point this season. Yeah. Maybe over the All-Star break, maybe in the summer, maybe later this season. But yeah, I think we should absolutely do another redraft, you know, looking ahead to the next 5 years. It's really interesting, I think, with guys like Curry and LeBron and KD and, like, even Kawhi now. Harden is in that, Lillard's in that. Because I think since we've done this exercise, it's like LeBron has not slowed down. KD is, you know, he's still getting banged up, but I still think he would be on one of our rosters just because he's so good when he's healthy. And we're seeing guys like Chris Paul continue to play well into their late 30s. Like, Curry doesn't seem like he's slowing down. So I think maybe the most difficult part, as opposed to, like, which young players do you include, is how many of these guys that we feel like should be nearing the end of their prime are you comfortable saying could still be really good? Because they don't even have to be great for all 5 years. But if you get peak Kevin Durant or peak Stephen Curry for 3.5 of the 5 years, that's still probably worth it.
Right. Like, would Curry go higher in our redraft this year than he did 3 years ago?
If you're saying it's starting now for the next 5 years, I would say he probably goes in like the same spot.
Yeah, same spot. Same with KD. Like, I would take KD over Harden now. I drafted Harden two spots before KD. So, yeah, there's a lot of that as well. We've just seen guys be able to play much longer than they have in the past. And, you know, I think one thing we did, obviously, we listed a ton of players that were left off. But I think just having this be five starters and seven bench players is good. That feels just limited enough to where these choices were very difficult.
Yep.
If we made this like a 20-man team, it would just get too convoluted. To some extent, I feel like this is a good amount, sort of just like drafting a real team.
Yeah, 100%. I'm trying to look just at the last few drafts here, like guys who would be obvious inclusions now. There's not as many as I would have thought. You know, like Halliburton, I think, is on the list. You could consider guys like Edwards and LaMelo Ball. I think they would get heavy consideration. You know, but then it's like all of a sudden, like last year's draft class, I feel like it's kind of lost it a little bit. Like Evan Mobley would be on my list, but like the numbers aren't overwhelming. Scottie Barnes is kind of plateaued. You know, it's like you're probably not taking Şengün. Cade Cunningham, who knows? He played like two games this year. I don't know. There are fewer like no doubters than I would have thought.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Cade would get drafted if we did this again, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think part of it is obviously the skepticism of the injury, but I think the other part of it is there's just so many guys that it would be tough to justify taking him over some guys who are just, you know, more proven commodities.
Right, exactly.
Where would Wembanyama go, out of curiosity? Sorry to spring this on you, but...
No, that's... I mean,
are we talking top 10?
I was actually just thinking that. What about the rights to Wembanyama? I mean, I do... I feel like my draft definitely fell off. Like, that's my sort of Trae Young. So sort of, what is that? Like my fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. Mm-hmm. Like my ninth pick is where I sort of, I don't feel as comfortable right now. Or where I think... So I think maybe he would go like 15 to 20, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking maybe even higher. Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, even looking back on this, it's like, would I take him over? I don't even know if I would take him over Paul George right now. Like in theory, it sounds like, yes, of course you would. But and some of it too is like, I don't know, maybe you put this in context of I'm building this fictional team of all superstars. Who really cares if I mess up on my one pick? Like if I take Wembanyama sixth and it doesn't work out, who cares? Because my seventh guy is Kevin Durant.
I think what's interesting about Wembanyama too is everybody, myself included, is kind of assuming that he's going to be good right away. Like I don't think there's going to be this like 5 year runway. Like obviously he's going to improve as he gets older, but I think the idea is that like it's possible that he could just be like a top 20 guy right away. And there's like not many rookies I would say that about, but it's in the realm of possibility. So when you're talking about a 5 year time span, it's like, I mean, you're assuming that at least by year three, I mean, he could be competing for MVPs. Like we've seen young players do that in recent years already.
Yeah. And at the very least, he's just going to be probably an elite defender. So you have that as like your absolute baseline. And then you add in the 3-point shooting and the insane transition offense. And that's obviously why people view him as basically a can't miss.
I mean, Luka was 29-9-9 as a second year player. That is just completely out of hand as a 20-year-old. So that to me is kind of the baseline. Obviously he's a completely different player. You're not going to expect those kind of like assist numbers. He's just going to affect the game differently, but it does feel like anything short of that will be somewhat of a disappointment, you know, in terms of that kind of impact that soon. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. This was not supposed to be a Victor Wembanyama discussion by any means. Last thing I have is we each picked a coach. You went with Dick Nurse, and for some reason it looks like I went with Jeff Van Gundy.
Yeah, you did. You said you're pulling him out of retirement.
He's been rumored for several jobs since we did this. So I don't know who else I would take over him. And if you were redoing it right now, would you still take Nurse?
I don't think that's like a bad pick, is it? I
It's not bad. No, I mean, I don't know that there's like another super obvious candidate. It's like probably Spoelstra is the default answer.
Yeah, Spoelstra. Maybe there's still something to be said about Pop. I like Ty Lue a lot. I think what he's done in LA.
Tenenoa against the Lakers.
Underrated. Yeah. I think those are the guys. Yeah. How about you? I mean, if Jeff Van Gundy was not available,
if he declined to take the job, man. Yes. Stan Van Gundy, probably.
Right.
No, I don't know. I don't think there's anybody super obvious. I think we're right. I mean, you could go with Michael Malone's got his team at number one in the West. Maybe him.
Taylor
a lot of
Jenkins.
People like Willie Green. Yeah, Taylor Jenkins for sure. Steve Kerr, I think probably deserves mention as well.
True. Yeah, Steve Kerr.
That's probably it. I'm not taking Darvin Ham. I'm not taking Chauncey Billups. I'm certainly not taking Steven Silas. I think I'm sticking with JVG. That's my final answer.
Is this kind of becoming a tough look for Chauncey Billups? I feel like he's maybe one of the least like talked about coaches. Like it always feels like we're talking about how disappointing Portland is, right? Like Portland's disappointing. Yeah. I feel like nobody even brings up the fact that Chauncey Billups is their coach.
I routinely forget that he's their coach, and then they play like the late TNT game on a Thursday, and it's like, oh yeah, there's Chauncey Billups and looking good in the Q-Zip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an incomplete grade. Like they played so well early in the year, and you know, we were singing his praises. I mean, they were 10-4 at one point. They were 17-13 not that long ago, which being four games over 500 in the West is a pretty decent accomplishment. They've fallen off really over the last month or so. And I don't know where they go. Like I don't feel like they're a buyer or a seller right now as the deadline approaches.
I think their bench is really poor. I think that's part of the problem.
Very bad.
But I think they have to legitimately consider what can we get for Anthony Simons? Because
sure,
I mean obviously
number two in the league and made threes.
It kills you to have to like in theory trade a guy like that. But if you need to make a move for a more of a win now player, not too many young guards in the league have a stock like he does. I think. 23 years old. I don't know exactly who you would get, but ideally probably a defender in the backcourt, right? I feel like that's been their Achilles heel in the Lillard era. It's like they had McCollum and now they have Simons. That's just a horrible defensive backcourt. You're going to get cooked every game. So if you can flip Simons for like a guy in the backcourt who can play a little defense, maybe
yeah,
just
I
do
just
that.
I don't know who that is because it has
I don't
to be
know
somebody
either.
It has to be somebody where you don't feel like you're dropping off because unless you're just kind of punting on the season and playing for next year, but I don't really get that feeling. And even if they're doing that, it's like they're not going to get into the bottom three or the bottom five or even the bottom seven probably. So like I don't know, they're kind of in that dead zone. It's like what elite defensive guard is out there? There's just not that many of those guys. Like you're not trading for Marcus Smart, you're not trading for Drew Holiday. Like who else is even out there?
I don't know.
RJ Barrett.
Yeah, RJ Barrett.
I'm shocked, by the way, that RJ Barrett was not brought up in that draft. He was in the league. I can't believe I didn't at least slide him in as my 12th guy.
He was only a rookie at that point. All right, he's averaging 14 a game. I'm 13 shots.
Right, but if anything, I should have been higher on him then than at any point over the last few years.
Wasn't that his best year?
Arguably, in some ways, yeah. All right, we got to wrap this thing up. We'll be back again tomorrow. Going to do another episode. Kind of diving into some other topics, and you'll be back on Friday with Ken and Shannon as well. So keep an eye out for both of those in your feed. You'll also be joining us on the 3-hour marathon SiriusXM show tonight on Wednesday. So if you're a SiriusXM listener, if you check out the RotoWire show, make sure to tune in tonight. We got Alex coming on. We got Dan Titus from Yahoo coming on as well. Going to talk plenty of hoops, but we'll talk again on Thursday, Alex.